While the political ramifications of the coronavirus are still to be determined, they've already impacted this year's primary elections. Andy Downs, director of the Mike Downs Center for Indiana Politics, spoke with WBOI News Director Rebecca Green via Zoom to answer questions now that Indiana's primary has been pushed back to June 2nd. Starting off, has Indiana ever moved its primary election before?
We actually did once, quite some time ago, actually pass legislation that was called the Skip Election Law, which changed the term limit for some local offices so that those local offices could be aligned with other offices, therefore reduce the number of elections we had to have. This was done during World War II as a way to save some money. After the war was over, a second law was passed and we went back to the sequence that you and I are used to now, where municipal elections, for the most part, are held in an odd-numbered year right before a presidential election. So that we know that we have changed things before. This was obviously something that happened on a much more immediate basis than that. We sort of had time to plan for that. This was a very sudden change. There's no legislation involved here. It was simply the chairs of the state parties communicating with the Secretary of State and the governor, and all of them going together to the Indiana Election Division and making a request for a couple of changes that certainly are changing the way we're going to do the election this year.
And what are some of those changes that we're going to see?
The two big ones actually are changing the date. So first of all, a lot of people, by the time they're listening to this, theoretically should have voted because the primary would have been earlier in the week. But we have actually changed the date of the primary to Tuesday, June 2nd. So it's still on Tuesday, but we moved it out basically 4 weeks. And that was going to allow for not only some public health issues to be addressed, but also for candidates to figure out how to campaign in a different world. The other change that's really significant is that we are seeing an ability to vote by mail that we have not seen before. Previously in Indiana, if you wanted to vote by mail to receive an absentee ballot, you had to meet one of a number of criteria. For example, you were going to be in the hospital or you were going to be out of town, whether that's at work, vacation, or away to school, didn't matter. But there was always, you had to have a reason for requesting that absentee ballot be mailed to you. This year, you're allowed to vote by mail no matter what. And so there's actually a push for people to do that so that we minimize the number of folks who actually have to go into the polling locations to vote and maximize distance between people. If somebody wants to vote by mail, there are a couple of ways for them to do that. First of all, everyone has to remember it's a multi-step process. You actually have to request a ballot, and then you have to send the ballot back in once it's mailed to you. So it's a two-step process. But you can request that ballot by going to indianavoters.com, or you can request that ballot by contacting your county election board. And you can do that by phone. You can do that by going to their websites. So for people who are wherever they are in Indiana, indianavoters.com will work. Or if you know the county you're in, contact that county election board and get and request the ballot be mailed to your house.
What will this do to polling locations? Obviously, polling places in some communities can be very tightly packed. In other communities, depending on what type of election it is, it can be not well attended. And a lot of poll workers tend to be older people that right now we're trying to protect. And so what does this do for polling places? Are there going to be more or less, fewer workers, polling booths stationed further apart? What can we expect when we go to if we choose to go to the polls in June?
I think a lot of people understand exactly what you mean because they have voted at different places in their lifetime. And sometimes it's been in a little small area where everyone's packed in. Other times it's been in a massively large room where there is, you know, so much room between things that you almost have to yell to hear people talk to people on the other side of the room. This election, there's actually a logistical issue that comes into play. And that is that all of those places where we vote are rented for elections. Some of them are not available in June, but they were available in May. Believe it or not, a lot of county election boards have had to communicate with all of their polling locations to find out if they're available. And sometimes they've been told, no, sorry, we're not going to be available. So the election board has had to go find new places. Additionally, if we see a big uptick in the number of people voting by mail, then we know that we'll see a decreased need on election day. And that, of course, is part of what election boards are hoping for across the state. because what they want to be able to do is shrink the number of locations and hold those locations, make sure the locations are large enough so that machines can be spaced out, and that they will need fewer workers. Because as you've pointed out, a lot of election day workers are folks who fall into categories of older and probably maybe not the best idea to be out in really close contact with lots of people. So everyone needs to watch very carefully if they decide to go vote on election day as opposed to voting by mail. But if they decide to vote on election day, they'll want to check before they go to vote to make sure they know exactly where they're supposed to go. Most of us probably will not be voting in the same location we voted in before.
Will they be letting us know where our new polling locations are, and when can we expect that information, or where can we find that information?
Yeah, there certainly everyone's going to be notified if their location has changed, and that will be in the form probably of a postcard or some piece of mail that comes to your house to let you know what the change is. But also, if you visit the County Election Board website, whichever county you're in, visit their Election Board website, and theoretically IndianaVoters.com would be able to also give you that information. But I want to caution people, this is a very dynamic thing that's happening right now. So if you were to, for example, check IndianaVoters.com today, you may think, okay, great, now I know where I'm supposed to go vote on June 2nd, except it could actually still change between now and then. So people who are going to go on election day, I encourage you to take a look no more than a couple of days in advance, also at IndianaVoters.com to find out where you're supposed to vote. But watch for that piece of mail and keep watching the news, because I think what you're going to see are election administrators across the state sending out press releases and holding media events, advertising, or trying to get the news organizations to cover those stories so that places like WBOI can post the new locations up on the screen for everybody to see who visits the website.
You talked earlier about some of the changes to campaigning. What are some things that candidates are going to have to do differently in the next couple of weeks? Obviously, they've delayed their campaigning. They're not maybe having certain events that they might have, but what are some other changes?
For a lot of people, the fundraising was the thing they thought of first, because how do you hold a fundraiser when you don't want people getting too close to one another? Keep in mind, there are some folks who run for office and they actually hold the non-event fundraiser, where they say to people, hey, I'm inviting you to a fundraiser, but if you give me money, we don't have to hold the fundraiser. And that's everybody's favorite kind of fundraiser. But fundraising is only one part of it. The majority of dollars that are raised for campaigns are done so via telephone, and that's work that can still go on, although that has become much more difficult as people's income has been cut off or certainly minimized in some instances. So that's become a problem for candidates. But the bigger one is how you actually contact voters. What we know is that direct candidate-to-voter contact is the best kind of voter contact. It's the most likely to get someone to want to support you. That is virtually impossible right now, because you're not supposed to be walking neighborhoods and going up to people's front doors and talking with them. That's just not a real good idea at this time. That doesn't mean that you can't do things through Zoom or other forms of communication. It doesn't mean you can't hold things on Facebook and do other sorts of interaction that way. But that, you know, being on the porch, shaking someone's hand, walking a neighborhood, those are really out the window at this point. Really good campaigns always have some element of that in them, and they'll have to find a different way to do that, whether that means sending more direct mail, maybe they're able to buy additional kinds of advertising, or maybe they are able to be creative with things through digital media that allow them to get that voter contact. Campaigns that were relying exclusively or very heavily on voter contact, they're in a lot of trouble right now. A lot of those campaigns decide, well, we're going to do shoe leather because we either can't raise a lot of money or don't want to raise a lot of money. And now you're stuck with needing to raise money in order to communicate in other ways. And that makes campaigning very difficult. In the end, this shift happened, you know, some time ago. Theoretically, campaigns should have been able to adjust. I'm not saying it would have been easy. But what we're going to see here in some respects is the difference between campaigns that were running well and are run well, and those that were not or are not. Because the ones that are good were able to make the shift.
Because of the the time of this election, the type of election that it is, there's a number of races in smaller communities that are often decided in the primary. So this might be really the only time there's contested races in some counties for things like coroner or other positions. And those are often that shoe leather or just kind of out and about contact kind of thing. In your experience observing Indiana's elections, is this the kind of situation that would benefit a lesser known candidate at this time? Would people be more likely to not make a change? Or how would packed races fare right now versus maybe in years past?
One of the things I've always loved about local races, especially local races in smaller areas in terms of population size, I've always liked them because they are inherently better for candidate to voter contact. You can literally meet every voter in some of our jurisdictions. And I think that's wonderful because in the end, when a candidate is meeting someone face to face, they can't dodge questions as easily. They're not controlling the message the way they can in a television commercial, et cetera. So I love those races because it is a much more egalitarian in terms of resources. You don't have to have a lot of money in order to run in those situations. So this election is really hurting those locations because now you do need some other form of communication. People who have good name recognition in those smaller population geographic areas, they're in a better position than people who have less name recognition because for a lot of voters, they'll show up and they'll say, well, I might not have gotten to talk directly to the candidate, but I know this name or I know this person, and that's good enough for me. And they'll simply pick. But when you look at a lot of these races and you see that there are four or five people running in a primary for the nomination, and you're right, in many instances, the primary is the election. But when you see five people running in a race, remember that somebody can actually win that race with, say, 21% of the vote. And in some instances, that's a very small number of voters. So if you are a candidate who has a solid core of voters who are with you no matter what, your chances of being able to win actually goes up as turnout goes down and as the number of candidates goes up. Because if it's two people, you need 50% plus one. If it's five people, you can win with 21% of the vote. It's a lot easier to win when you only need to come up with some fraction as opposed to at least 50%.
Is there anything else politically that you've observed in the last 6 weeks or so that has been impacted by the pandemic? I think maybe one of the things we're seeing is the importance of government response, be that federal response, be that state response, even local response. I'm going to ask you to make a prediction, I think. Do you see people being more or less interested in government when we come out of this or as we go through this?
I think there's no doubt that people are paying attention at this moment. And I think that this is a big enough moment. It's having a large enough impact that we will see people continue to pay attention at least through November and maybe beyond that. This is truly something that's not even just once in a generation. This is something that happens once in multiple generations. So, yeah, it's going to drive interest. The part of the issue, though, is how do people exercise or show involvement because of that interest? We saw over in Ohio, for example, somewhat down voter turnout. Their expectations are voter turnout here might be down because people don't want to get into close contact with other individuals. Now, let's get to the issue of where we might see the political effect of this. Clearly at the national level, we will see it. This is now going to be the number one issue that's discussed in the fall as far as the presidential campaign is concerned. We will see it discussed for states with Senate races. It'll be discussed for that, certainly for House of Representative races as well. At the state level, though, it will be less of an issue. Now, having said that, Governor Holcomb's been getting an awful lot of what we call earned media. He gets to be on television every day. The press events are covered. And quite frankly, from a textbook standpoint, he's been doing a wonderful job. He's not been dominating those things. He starts them off. He lets the experts talk. He sums things up. He makes a few statements that makes it sound like he's a good leader who's brought people together to try to accomplish stuff. And so this has been very good for him. And it's why you see with what minimal polling we have out there, it looks like his approval numbers are going up or at least approval of how he's handling it is fairly high. Then when you move down to the local level, what you see is even more a reduction in those partisan differences. For example, here in Allen County and Fort Wayne, you saw the county commissioners, all three Republicans, and the mayor of Fort Wayne, a Democrat. They've gotten together a bunch of times to talk about what they are doing and how they're doing it. And we know as voters, or those who just happen to have a public opinion, we know that local government actually is trusted more than state government, and it's trusted more than national government, in part because we see what they do. In the end, potholes have to get filled, garbage has to get picked up, communities have to deal with planning issues and new developments and all that sort of stuff. Some of that stuff cuts across party lines and becomes much more pragmatic than larger issues that we see discussed at the state and national level. So is it going to be one of the issues that we talk about this fall? Absolutely, it's going to be an issue that we talk about this fall. I don't think that it will be as big an issue at the local level, in part because, remember, as you pointed out, a lot of the elections are actually going to be over when the primary is over, because that's where the contested race actually exists.
Andy, thank you so much for coming by WBUI Presents and helping us to make sense of the politics of this current moment. Thank you so much.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.